ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Having a big family home's long been the Australian dream. I mean, a lot of people want the mega mansion, media rooms, all that stuff. But with property prices painfully high, despite recent slowdowns, a lot of people are adapting their dreams to smaller homes and in some cases really small. Now, a tinier place might be cheaper to buy or rent, but once you're in there, how do you make the most of less space? When is small too small? Are we all going to end up like Hong Kong in tiny high-rise little packet rooms? What's the right and wrong approach? Claire Scorpo's an architect at Aegis Scorpo Architects, as well as a lecturer at RMIT School of Architecture and Urban Design. She also lives in a very small home, so she's got expertise and lived experience here. Claire, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you so much for having me.
So where did you start off? In a bed sit in Melbourne for, I guess?
We did. I think leaving the family home of where I grew up, which was definitely a more suburban and kind of outer suburban kind of lifestyle.
Three bedroom house with a backyard.
It was. We were on quite a bit of acreage to start off with. So I was very much familiar with the large scale Australian living that we all see as the Australian dream. But I suppose when it came to me deciding where I lived, it was always amenity was the biggest concern for me. So that idea of living in that neighbourhood that you're able to walk, things at your front door, not relying on a car, those things were always of great value to me. And I suppose that kind of led to a decision of smaller homes from the start. So from a one-bedroom home to a 23-square-metre bedsit that I shared with my partner and our medium-sized dog up until...
What? A dog as well? What?
Yes, and a dog, yep. She was a decent-sized dog, so yes.
How small is too small, Claire? I mean, I mentioned that Hong Kong thing, yes, at the beginning because I've, you know, lived there for a bit and experienced what that's like. I mean, some of the places that people live in there are... small beyond belief. What's the minimum amount of space you need? I mean, 23 square metres, you say, that's what, a bit over 10 metres by 2 metres. It's not a lot.
It is not a lot. And it probably is on that lower side of small. I think in terms of even to be able to finance a mortgage, I think it needs to be 35 square metres. So that's probably the lower expectation end. But it's a lot to do with, I think when you think about small living, you've got to think beyond the footprint of the actual house itself. It's like what's in your immediate vicinity? Do you have a laundromat that you can use so you don't have to have a laundry space? How can you divide up the space so that you have multiple places to be able to live and operate and kind of, an existence that's a bit more plural? So I think there's not, there probably is a minimum. 23 was very small.
Well, once you're below 30 square metres, are you really talking about, I mean, I know you live there with two of you, but really are we talking about single occupancy here?
Well, this worked very well. It depends on how you want to live. Mm. I think a lot of people would have struggled in something that small. So most of the time, and I think in that development, you're probably looking at mostly individuals living in those spaces. But what I think is kind of interesting as well is you've got to think about the idea of small. I think we always think about, the first thing we think about when we think of small homes or tiny living, it is all that kind of typology that's really mostly suited to one or two people. Mm. I think an interesting way of thinking about it is what's small for different typologies. So we can actually broaden the kind of way of talking about this topic and think about what does small look like when it comes to a family house or a house that you share with one other person. So I think small is always very relative to the kind of situation that you're in and I suppose your individual needs and how you can kind of utilise that's around you to kind of enhance that.
I mean, is it fair to say that, but it probably is accurate to say, isn't it, that Australian houses are getting smaller because block sizes are smaller?
Ooh, that's the great, that doesn't stack up at all. So bizarrely, yes, you're right in part of it. So yes, our block sizes are getting smaller. So I think the average in Melbourne, like new kind of greenfield suburbs, are probably around the 400 to high 300 square metre range, where we used to have the quarter acre block, which was about 1,200 square metres. So, in the last, since the 50s, I suppose, they've shrunken a lot. But our homes have increased a lot as well. So I think they went from, you know, 90 to 100 square metres in the 50s, and now we're up at, like, you know, there's plenty of houses built that are in the 400 square metre range. So our houses are definitely not necessarily getting smaller. Lots of our houses are getting bigger, but our blocks are getting smaller.
I visited the house I grew up in once when I was, when I was a grown adult. Mm. I mean, I thought it was, you know, like a roomy, good house, three bedrooms, one bathroom, but no houses had two bathrooms.
No.
And it seemed fine to me as a place to grow up. When I went back there, it seemed really small.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we have grown to want more things in the way that we live. I think there's a lot of factors in that too. Like, our lives are different. There's a lot more, you know, duo working parents, time is poor, and things are almost considered standard now. So it's very rare to build a new house that doesn't have two bathrooms. It's very rare to build a house that doesn't have, you know, multiple living spaces, multiple bedrooms, more than what's perhaps needed.
Mm.
You know, double car garages were never a thing. So there's a lot of almost baseline needs that has come into our housing that facilitates that largeness, and, you know, we think that's kind of the base level of the way that we're living at the moment.
Claire Scorpos, my guest, she's an architect. We're talking about small living spaces. Claire moved into a place that was 23 square metres, which I think is testing the limits of it. Yeah, you say you can't really get a mortgage on anything under 35 square metres, is that right?
We can, but it's more challenging too. So most of the time, most banks will only loan at 35 square metres plus.
Yeah. Because what? Because they think?
Well, I think they think it's not a...
not habitable.
Yeah, possibly. They've got concerns about, you know, the kind of living space. It's atypical. Mm. And so anything that's out of the kind of typical range of what's considered, you know, optimum dwelling size maybe seems like a risk.
The bed sits had a long history though, hasn't it? And you know, and people and developers are still building them, aren't they?
Look, not that much, but there are some developments that are. Like, so I know there's some kind of, you know, I'm from Melbourne, and so there's definitely a very few number of developments that are building bed sits within their kind of apartment types.
Mm. So what's the smallest of one bedroom, is it?
One bedroom's typically the smallest, so it's very unusual to get studios, but they are coming into the market, but in a very fractional way.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not a typology you see much, whereas I suppose when the apartment was built that we were living in, that was built for a particular purpose. So that was for returned servicemen that were coming back from the war, and so it was built under the premise that they also had, you know, a dining hall and facilities to do their washing. So it was part of a larger idea of a development.
Yes, that's not the case today with your studio apartment, is it? I mean, there's not usually a common laundry facility.
Not normally, but again, the ones that I have seen, so things like Nightingale, which is a kind of a model in Melbourne that's gained a lot of traction, has the idea of kind of bringing those kind of core facilities to a more communal space. So that does allow those smaller apartments to work because the laundries are elsewhere. There's garden space and kind of flow over space, you know, even like a space for a bar. So, you know, there are things that make the whole development work together as opposed to a whole lot of individual homes that are more isolated.
What should you not do? What are the common mistakes that people make, do you think?
What the mistakes that people make? I think we've got this idea that the bigger is better, and that, you know, that's I think people aspirationally kind of want to move to the next thing and the bigger thing. Again, I feel like people are a lot more flexible when it's just one person or two people or particular stages of life. You know, maybe when you are out a little bit more or you are quite genuinely relying on what's around you, you're more open to having a small space to live in. I think when we move to the family home and we start thinking about how we live, we assume that we need more space, which we definitely do. 23 square metres does not suit a family.
You can't raise a kid in a bed.
You can't. And I think we moved when our pram actually would not physically fit through the door. But I think you've got to be careful then when you move to that next scale of house about what you lose when you go bigger. I think there's, for every kind of different relationship, there is a scale that is more the optimum size that we should look to. And that size is something that allows for, you know, I think there's things of social connection. So if you've got a really big house with lots of space, sometimes I would say that sounds like a dream because we've got two small boys and, you know, the idea of having a large house where everyone's got space is, you know, is a great idea. But I think, what do you lose with that extra space? And I think sometimes that social friction that comes about because you've got to share rooms, or I know at our house, which is quite small for what we're in now, we, you know, if everyone's getting cabin fever, we have to open the doors and be like, we've got to go outside. So you force those connections outside because you can't do everything in an internal sealed envelope.
It's true about that. I mean, expectations. I certainly shared a bedroom until I left home.
Yes.
Was common. You know, most kids I knew did.
Absolutely. So the shared bedroom, also shared living space. Like, you know, I remember fighting for who's watching the television. Whereas now, if we've all got our separate devices and go to our different separate rooms, what does that do to the family model?
What about furniture? I've been in some of these tiny places where the bed folds into the wall.
Yes.
Is that a good idea?
Look, I think everything's got a place, but I think you've got to think about what you want your everyday to be. So how do you kind of scope your everyday living? If it's kind of those solutions that once a month when you have friends over, you can fold it back up and you can use the space, great idea. But if you think you're going to be folding away a Murphy bed every single morning, making it, strapping it in, folding it up, possibly not so much. I think sometimes some good things to think about is how we occupy our walls more. In small spaces, we don't have the luxury of having furniture that has space floating all around it.
Mm-hmm.
So pushing your table up to a wall can be a really great way to save space, but also create a nice little nook to kind of sit at. Couches right at the corners of rooms to open up the space. Those little things are often, sometimes it's often a little bit of furniture reconfiguration that can make a space feel a lot bigger.
Some pieces of furniture are probably too big. Couches, for example.
Yes, so you can see.
Should people get used to smaller couches?
Well, again, I think sometimes we see all the pictures of what couches normally look like in spaces, often they do, again, have a lot of space around them. And I remember when I first moved into my first apartment, which was just a one bedroom, quite small, I liked having a lot of people over. And so this couch I chose, which was quite a large L-shaped couch, when I first put it in the apartment, I remember thinking, oh, my God, the apartment is just all couch. But I used it to push against the wall and create a bit of a room divider in, and it worked exceptionally well. So it certainly wouldn't be a couch that most people would buy for a one-bedroom home. But you've just got to think about the space differently and think about the furniture as being almost that element that does divide the space up.
Mm.
And so I don't think it's necessarily that you've got to buy those little petite, you know, beautiful little two-seater couches that might be slightly uncomfortable as well. But you've got to think about also, like, can someone stay on your couch? Or, like, how can you create a small space that's able to be quite adaptable to different ways of using it?
Don't buy too much kitchen stuff either.
We don't need 14 kitchen gadgets, no.
No, we don't. All right, small spaces. We do have bigger expectations these days. Maybe we need to revise them too. Claire, it's been good to talk. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Lovely to speak to you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.